Hi, and welcome to the next episode of our podcast, The Leaders Playlist. My name is Renee Craven, and I'm joined by my co-host, David Clifford. Our guest today is Angela Giacoumis. She is the CEO of Emotus in Australia, and Angela brings with her 30 years of experience in human resources and people management. The leadership quality that we're going to be exploring today in this podcast is empathy. Angela, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm glad to be here. Excited to be here.
We're really excited to talk to you as well, especially today's topic, empathy and what's going on in the world today in the last 18 months. It's quite an important topic, so we're really excited. So Angela, tell us the story of Angela.
Oh, the story of Angela really is, I guess when people ask me, what do I do? My nickname over my career has been the people whisperer. So I've had a career in HR and I ran and founded a company called CareerLink back in 1991. I had this dream to go and impact people and set up a business. I had my first child, who's now 30, and decided to be in business for myself. So as a HR practitioner, I set up a consulting company that grew really fast. And led that for 28 years. So people know me as a people person. My whole life has been about people, whether it be placing people in employment or whether it be training people, coaching people. That's been the core mantra of my life. And I've always had this thing about igniting possibility. The possibility you can get a job, the possibility that you can grow further. And I think it goes back to something. I wanted to be a teacher when I was a kid and there was a glut of teachers and my dad said, you're never going to get a job. I ended up being, when I set CareerLink up, it was originally in training. So I ended up working for myself initially and then I took on more trainers and then clients would ask me around, could you find staff? And then I went into staffing. Then I went into OD work, and then by 2018, I decided it was time to, shift the focus and everything I'd been doing in the OD part of that business. Somebody came out of the UK. We sold CareerLink, and Emotus was born the next week. So literally, that's what I've been doing ever since. We work inside of organisations, helping them to prep their people for the speed of change. And really our mantra is to unlock the greatness within. And then along the way, it's like I get called the can you do your people thing with me or that person? So alias people whisperer.
That's quite a compliment.
It's a funny thing. I think, well, it's like the horse whisperer.
There's worse things to be called.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how things get. So nicknames.
What does empathy mean to you, Angela?
Empathy to me is our ability to be with the emotions of another human being and be able to appropriately respond. So when you think about empathy, I think it's just to be with people, but be and connect to their emotions that they're experiencing in any one moment. It's a very powerful human skill.
When did you realize that you needed to work on your empathy?
I think it really came to the fore for me when I started. I observed in my last business that we were seeing a lot of dysfunction in the workplace and a lot of challenges and conflict that people were dealing with. And I started to realize that I needed to use more skills in being able to connect with people. So in that inquiry process, I began to look at what makes for good communication and what is a skill to be able to help you to connect. And really that's where empathy comes to the fore, not only tuning into what somebody's saying, but actually tuning into their emotions. So, and being a leader that was running fast, I really hadn't thought about the power of emotionally connecting with somebody. And in doing so, I had to learn first how to slow down to be able to pick up somebody's emotions. So it came out of a need as a leader to be able to really connect with people when they're in conflict, to do more problem solving. So I say there was a bit of pain involved that I needed to build my skill set.
And how did you kind of build that skill set out?
Believe it or not, I learned that sometimes we've got to slow down to speed up. So, and what do I mean by that? The skill of empathy requires one of the segues into empathy is mindful listening. being able to really be present to what is being communicated with us. So, and there's a real nuance between being able to hear what somebody says and then hear the emotional content of what's being expressed. So for me, it was really slowing down and then practicing the skill of really being present to what was being said and building my library of language around emotion, what was emotions for me. So it's been dual purpose, slowing down and then building my emotional awareness too.
What are some of the things that you did to slow down? How did you teach yourself to slow down?
I think slowing down, so you're going to think this is crazy. I went to the US to do a mindfulness course with the people that originally took mindfulness training into Google. So I knew that it was something I needed to develop because I'm a leader that likes to get things done or has an action bias. So I thought, you know what? I need to be in a conversation around mindfulness and such. So over 5 months, I traveled in and out of the US to do this program. And I learned how to meditate and build up my own centering practice and breath work. So the key to activating empathy for me has been about learning how to use the power of the breath to really get present. So then I'm still enough to be able to pick up what somebody's saying as well as what they're expressing emotionally. So that's where it's begun. That's what I mean by slowing down to actually create space to speed up with a new skill that helps you to be more effective.
So when you were going through this, I'm just trying to think, obviously you've put a lot of work in, you feel very passionate about empathy. Do people notice the change? Do they see a difference from the old you to the new you, that less of an action bias to the more mindfulness?
You know, one of the greatest compliments, a dear friend of mine passed away from breast cancer probably 3 years ago. And I think one of the greatest compliments she paid to me, and I knew things were working, was she says, "I don't know what's different about you, but you're really here." And in saying that, you know, putting my phone away, just learning to be with another human being is an extremely vulnerable thing. And I just feel like that was a real gift she gave to me, but I got the gift as well because I got to be with her in the most challenging time of her life. Yeah, it was really very powerful. And since then, I think I'm often told people can connect with me easier. Yeah, there's sorts of the little things. It's not describable, but yeah, I've had feedback. Yet it's harder to practice sometimes with kids, teenage kids.
I know that. Well, I say all kids. So I got three. Yeah, I've got someone with autism, and I'm trying to put myself in his shoes. Sometimes is completely it's impossible. Sometimes I just can't get it. I understand. It's funny that with technology and all that they have, it's just putting that phone away and just, you know, pushing it to the side is just a major gesture, isn't it?
It is.
You're here rather than being distracted.
And I know I have a child who's, you know, challenged with a mental health challenge and over the last 4 years. And I think even then, as a parent, I want to get in and solve, which I think leaders always have an action bias. Even we have that with our own family members. And I've had to learn my trick for kids: sit on your hands. So I tend to put my hands under my backside. So it's get present, Angela. Just listen. No solving. And that works. You know, in the most challenging moments with my daughter, empathy has been able to transform the conversation.
You said before, Angela, been told you have an ability to connect with people. We did a training course together, the ORSC Fundamentals training course. Mm-hmm. Last year.
It was a long time ago.
And it was online, obviously, and that's why we're here today. That's why I've asked you as a guest on our podcast, because I felt that. I felt that connection to you, even in we're just in group activities and stuff like that. You were one of those standout people for me, and I just wanted to learn more. So following you on LinkedIn and your messages every day, you know, I always stop when I'm scrolling through. I always stop and I read yours. Like LinkedIn's got a little bit like gossipy or Facebooky or something. I don't know what it is, but yours, they're always very inspirational. I always stop and read every single one that you write.
Oh, thank you very much. I mean, I think personally, I just try and contribute, come from a place of contribution and try to speak authentically with feeling and words.
So how do you, okay, I'm assuming here that sometimes your action bias takes charge. Mm-hmm. How do you catch yourself? How do you get back into that empathetic state?
You know, that's a great question, because I think we are hardwired in, you know, we have those patterns, and those patterns arise for me, particularly when I'm not taking care of myself, I'm running hard, and if I'm under stress. So how I catch myself is I try to notice, and the good news is I've got a team around me that will also tap me on the shoulder and say things like, you're not listening. And they'll point out when, you know, there's an incongruency between, you know, how I want to show up as a leader and what's actually arising. Now, we are not perfect, none of us. And I've noticed I've had to go, you know, self-care is front and center for me right now, because I think we can have, the other thing is empathy burnout. You know, if you're in occupations where you're constantly serving people, then I think the challenge for those of us who are naturally empathically focused, you know, when I coach leaders who've got high levels of empathy, I say there's no we if there's no me, right? So people with high empathy often give. And that's not what empathy is about. It's about also give. I say it's two ways. It's giving empathy to yourself too, because it's hard to give empathy to another person if you don't give it to yourself. So there's the managing of the me, you know, am I empathetically supporting myself and being kind to myself as I would be if I was being appropriately responding to another? Am I doing the same with myself? So catching yourself, noticing pattern recognition, you know, oh, this is a similar dialogue. You know, oh, that didn't go so well. Why didn't that go well? Actually, did I actually really listen? Doing a bit of a step back. After action review. But you don't get it perfect. It's a practice. It's like anything in your life. And the motivator, why you want to do it, brings greater rewards than if you didn't do it.
I'm paraphrasing, sorry. So you create a kind of a boundary that to protect yourself, because if the well is dry, right, you can't give empathy to other people. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're kind of saying?
Yeah, I'm saying, and I think that's really important, because also not fusing with the emotions of another. So we could tumble and collapse, you know, when we're being appropriate or someone is sharing a very powerful story that there's a lot of emotion. It's not, I say, tumbling or collapsing into that story and fusing, and then you get emotional yourself. There's a boundary of what's in and out of bounds. Empathy is it's a skill that helps you to connect with somebody, but I think you have to have a boundary too. If I've got somebody who's very emotional, then my role is to really listen. It's not to solve something for them or to provide a solution or to compare my story to their story or jump in the pond with them. It's really choosing to let them know you're there and that you get what they're saying. But, you know, that's actually for them to solve, but you're there with them. You're in the boat with them. So it's hard to do that if you're not in your own boat. I say you've got to put the oxygen mask on self before you put it on another.
I was just going to say that's what they say, isn't it? Yeah, you got to do
that.
It is. Because, like, you could be helping someone else and then you die, right? Or
you're
so much caught up in their thing, you take that problems they have home with you. And if you multiply that by the number of people you talk to, you've got a bigger problem than the person, all those other individuals.
And you'll find that I think we can see a lot of burnout here, that if you don't understand that distinction, your capacity to give, well, you just can't do it. And then you're ending up with burnout.
In your work, the leaders that you're working with, have you seen more of that burnout that you were just talking about?
I have never seen burnout like I'm seeing right now. In the last 3 months, and I've been in this area in development and HR for over 30 years, I've never experienced anything like it. We're not only seeing it in leaders, teams, and when I talk burnout, I'm seeing senior leaders falling, collapsing mentally at work, having to take time out through mental breakdown, and then getting coaching and psychological support to go back into work. I've never seen that in my career, which is of great concern, you know, being able to recognize burnout. You know, we have to help leaders, I think, understand where, you know, the hybrid work environment, what does that look like? What do boundaries look like? what does it mean to be a leader now in this environment?
And that would be kind of borne out as well, but there's obviously there's a lot of numbing going on, kind of thing, people getting more, drinking more, right? Instead of having that one glass of wine turns into a bottle of wine, or the overeating maybe, there's the comforts that, you know, you go when you're in that space.
Well, I think it's learning, you know, what's in and out of what does work look like for me? And, you know, what does that mean when I'm working in different environments? If I'm, you know, homeschooling, if I'm preparing my meals, where I call it the zones that leaders need to set for themselves. You know, if I'm in this room, I'm actually in a work zone. As I slide my door open, I'm entering into my home zone. And that's, you know, that's about dialogue in the family. That's as you would in a team, like what and the relationships that exist. It's more complex than just, you know, you put a home office in a workplace. Learning that actually what's, I don't know if you know Adam Fraser's work where he talks about the third space, the zone between work and home, you know, having practices where we can move between the zones. Like you put down your laptop lid and you're in your next zone.
Yeah, shaking off the day and then just into the next phase of the day. Yeah.
My husband and I used to work at the same place years and years ago, and we used to have a lamppost on the walk home from the train to home. That post was when we stopped talking about work. So we would get it all out, we'd hit that post, and then we would stop talking about work. It was a deal that we had, and I've thinking back now, it was definitely a savior, because otherwise we would have just let it consume us and eat us away with the things that we were, you know, that was going on at that time. And that's not even anything remotely close to what's going on now for leaders.
We are seeing, it's interesting because we've been looking at the data of all the EQ profiling that we've been doing, which measures empathy. And one of the things we've seen since COVID hit is, and we've got data that we've held since 2015 going all the way through. So COVID hit, we were at, I think, 108 in the aggregate score of overall emotional intelligence at February of last year. It went down to 102. So we've lost ground in building people's emotional intelligence capabilities. And we know that when people are under stress, our capacity to utilize the part of the brain where, you know, our social and emotional capability sits is diminished. So in a time where we need it more than ever, people aren't able to activate it or can't seem to activate it because it's affected by stress levels too. Because you're in this sort of protective part of your brain, which is sort of just operationalizing all of your resources just to get what's done in front of you, the survival mode. You know, we talk about, you know, we've got to connect with people, hybrid teams. If I'm not in a state where I feel safe and I feel at rest or I can have strategies to bring me to that, then it's impossible to activate this social, emotional, you know, the default part that really is able to scan the environment. Oh, see that person's crying over there. You just won't see that. So this is the research coming out. It's, you know, having the agility to move between what's the task part of the brain and then this part of our brain that can, you know, connect with others, socialize, activate empathy and compassion. And, you know, what does a world look like without empathy, guys?
Looks like a scary place.
Yes.
I'm just as you were talking, I was thinking of so many things like over the last 18 months. You get into patterns, right? I can think I'm trying to homeschool. Oh my God, it was a disaster, right? And you know, my heart goes out to the teachers, right? They got an absolutely hard job. But like, I have three kids, they have class of 25 or 30. I'm trying to get them to stay still and concentrate for it. I found out it was like get up, turn on the laptop, straight into work mode. And I didn't have those phases as I talk about. It's just like, it was content. And I found that my work day was just going 12 hours or 14 hours. Mm-hmm. I thought, this has got to stop. And in between, I'm trying to do the house chores as well, and dinners and lunches and homeschool. I think I was pretty close to burnout. It was just nuts. And then I said, how could I have empathy with my kids or listen to them? Because I'm just I'm on robot mode. I've got to get from A to B and that's it.
Well, your brain is taking you into this protective, got to get things done. It's tunnel vision. It's exactly what you're talking about, your tunnel vision. You just, what's ahead of me? What have I got to get done? Analytical, just straight down, focused, getting it done. So when the brain's like that, it isn't, it's not open on the other side. So, and it's synergistic. But if you don't know that, then you don't know that inadvertently your relationships are breaking down. The thing that you very most want as a human being, connection, you're not able to get. You're meeting primal needs. You're meeting the security and safety needs that you have for your family, for your work. But this next level of need, which is we all have a need to have relationships, to connect, to flourish, and we're tribal. We want to belong somewhere. We're diminishing that inadvertently by not being able to activate empathy. So it's a dilemma.
Can you share with us some of the techniques or tools that you've been using with those leaders that you've seen are close to burning out, and how you've helped them to realize that and maybe switch on their empathy a little bit more?
Yeah, I think the first practice is I work with leaders to develop a practice.
Yeah.
So when I talk about develop a practice, people think, oh, you know, do I have to go and do yoga or, you know, get some mindful, you know, a yoga mat? I said, no. Let's just use what's already there. Let's use your, you know, breathing. So a very powerful technique is vagal breathing. It's where you take the breath in sort of and you bring a big belly breath in. You count the breath in on four and then you elongate the exhale on eight. Now, just three rounds. You know, centering up in a chair, you know, taking it in will help to activate that rest, digest sort of response system, put you more in a state of ease. And then, believe it or not, you're able, it's opening up your functioning, your cognitive, your ability to scan your environment. So it always begins there. And people think, is that like, no, that's where it begins. We've got to get you a little stiller. Then I think it's about helping people, the next step is, I think, helping people to understand the world of emotion. You know, now that's a very vulnerable place for leaders because they go, what do you mean, Angela? You know, I don't, you know, emotions. But, you know, emotional intelligence, if you define it, it's like being smarter with emotions, you know, and the way we respond to people when they are being emotional, ourselves and others. So being smarter with feelings. So I just try and get people to start to open up to the world of emotion and think of it like data. Like people are using language of words, emotions are a signal. So they're information. And then so you slow down and I get people to get present to their own emotions first. So start tapping into what am I feeling? Because if I notice what I'm feeling, it's much easier to notice it over there with others. So we begin with self. And then we start to get curious about others. You know, it's interesting. You know, you mentioned that. Like what emotion goes, what's the emotion behind what's being responded to? So building out people's emotional literacy skills. And then I have this technique I call listen. Loop back your understanding before you go link it to something you want to say. All right, so I call it the listen loop technique. Listen to what they're saying and what they're feeling and loop back in your words appropriately what, you know, your understanding of that was. But try and put the emotional content in there, which is really a skill in itself. It takes a lot of practice. And leaders will say, what if I get the wrong emotion? I say, don't worry, they'll tell you. You know, if you say, look, it sounds like you're really angry and they're not, they'll say, not angry, I'm frustrated. I said, that's okay. They've told you what they're feeling.
Yeah.
So, but it's empathy is vulnerable by nature. You know, it touches something in ourselves and I'm going into something that is a little risky, uncertain. I don't know how it's going to go, but it's one of those skills that connects you, brings people with you, creates following, which is we talk about that a lot in leadership. How do you create following? It's built out through this innate ability.
Nice. I like that. Was it loop? Listen, loop.
Link.
Link.
So listen, loop, link.
Nice.
So the link, everyone wants to go to listen and link.
Yeah.
So, and they miss this part, the looping actually, which slows people down, but actually speeds people up.
That's really interesting. Your breathing technique or breathing pattern, I use that exact same one at the start of every Pilates class I teach. Mm-hmm. Because everyone's rushed in from work or what they've just driven in traffic to get there. So I always start my classes just to get them present so that they can actually mindful of why they're there and what they're trying to do. They're investing that time in themselves. So I don't want them to waste it.
I do the same every coaching session, practice before a meeting, because everybody's coming into something. So, you know, getting present before we start is a skill in itself. So yeah, it's very, very valuable. I think I say that's the superpower of the 21st century. Mm. It's an ancient practice, but it's a superpower for us now. He'll go, it can't be that easy. Could it be that easy, Angela? So what would life be like if we entered it with more of a centered focus?
What's the next 10, 20 years look like for you?
Wow, that's a great question. We're right in the middle of iterating what we do. So we're blending technology in our practice with the human skills. We're out to really scale our work right now. But in saying that, at the same time, I've got a passion project to look at a new recovery model or supporting a new recovery model for people with mental health issues. So what I'm doing now, we're seeing things like burnout, mental health is on the increase issues. So that's my legacy stuff. I want to be able to do something that has impact in that area. We have impact every day. We bring value every day. But I think how can we offer a different model of support and recovery around people who may be experiencing burnout and maybe don't want to move into a medical model but need support through coaching or support. So, yeah, I see it, you know, and developing the next level of leaders to really take the business forward.
So given this is the Leaders Playlist podcast, what song do you use to ground to your empathy?
You know, that's a great question. You might think this is a little odd, but it's a song by Michael Jackson called Will You Be There?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and there's a version of it with the choir that is just, oh, I love it. I was playing it this week, so in a facilitated session, because I think it really speaks to will you be there for somebody? Will you be there for one another? So there's just a beauty about that track that I just love. There's a humanness about it.
Mm. And so you said you played it in one of your sessions. It's like, is music a big part of your sessions or your work?
Yes. Yeah. You know, your energy affects your emotional state. So I play music all the time, different types of music, music when we're virtually, you know, I've got a stand-up desk. Yes, all the time. I've got playlists. I've got the Dare to Lead virtual playlist. Yeah, so different tracks for different events.
That's the Brené Brown Dare to Lead, is that?
Yeah, that's the Brené Brown.
Yeah. I've been reading the books.
Does she have any Rush on there? I know she's a fan of the band Rush. Is that on the playlist?
Well, no, this is my playlist. I've made my own playlist. So she has her playlist. Her playlist is more country, Western type. It's a bit esoteric. So, I mean, she's got different ones, but, yeah, we've got, as a group of facilitators, we've put our own playlist together. Cool. It's on Spotify.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there you go. There's a plug. Go look for the Dare to Lead, right? So, Renee, you know I'm going to ask the same question of you.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I couldn't really think of anything specific. I usually go to the slower kind of songs, There's maybe even the ones that are a bit sad sounding, to really just to put myself in someone else's shoes or something like that. Not saying that they're sad, but just to bring it down. Yeah, it's usually one of those sad or slower songs. Mm-hmm. Dave, what's your song?
I'm going to go over the 80s. I'm going to go back to the 80s for this. I don't know if he was a big star over here, but he was back when I came from. Was it Nick Kershaw? And he has a song called Wouldn't It Be Good?
Oh.
And it's kind of like two people talking to each other and the other one's not seeing the other person's side. The other person thinks, oh, he's got everything. And they go, no, I don't. You'd be better where you are. And it's just like, you're not really seeing the other person. You're not connecting with them. You're just assuming something about them and it's not validating it. Like to your, what was it called? The listen... I've got to get in.
Listen, loop, link. Listening and linking, going straight over. Yeah.
So that'd be a completely different song if they had incorporated that into it. But yeah.
Well, and there's the ingredients there in the three song titles. Like, you know, will you be there? Like, really, you've got to be there to have empathy. Then you've got to actually connect with the feelings. And, you know, what happens if we don't, you know, like the mismatching. So, yeah. Powerful. Yeah.
So what book are you currently reading?
I am reading The Fearless Organization by Amy Edmondson.
What do you think of it so far?
Look, I think it's very research-based, lots of, you know, hard data and research. And I'm really interested in this area, like of psychological safety and how that impacts human interaction. It's a read. I pick it up, put it down. You know, I'm really committed to understanding, you know, the data and how we've come to, you know, how this is such an important issue and where did it, you know, the backup of the 20 years of research. So, yeah, that's on my nightstand right now. Might be there for a while.
Dave and I read that book a little while ago.
Yeah.
That was a book club book of ours.
Yeah, it just seems a lack of connection. Like when you read a Brené Brown book, I'm kind of a bad contrast, but there's a bit of a story. You can see her in it.
Yeah.
You know, you can.
It's hard to read.
Yeah. With that one, it's like, it's very researched. It was a lot of data.
It was very data. Yep.
And I think it loses that personal touch, the connection.
The storytelling, I think. So, I'm with it at the moment. And I think that speaks to the feeling part that we're talking about. You know, people connect to stories, and I think it's written with a rational perspective.
So, yeah, what is your favourite smell?
Oh, I love springtime, love jonquils, I love flowers. I love the smell of fresh flowers in a house. Pine tree, there's lots I love the smell of. The Christmas tree, whenever you get a fresh tree in the house. But right now, I've just stopped on the way and smelt some jonquils, the spring flowers.
Right, I have no idea. Being from the Northern Hemisphere, I don't know what that is.
You can't really use that excuse longer. You know that.
I know. In a couple of years, I've been half my life in Australia.
Yeah,
I get that. But you know, there are certain things that are just common recall for you guys. They're not for me, right?
Yeah.
So, as a kid, what was your favorite toy?
You know what? I was a real Barbie fan. And cutout dolls, you know, actually first it came the cutout dolls and just put the, you know, paper dolls and then Barbie. I was like always into dressing up, you know, and then later dressing up, you know, the clothes basket with the dress up clothes.
What TV show are you currently binging?
You know what? I've just been watching Billions. We've been watching that. We watch that in excessive amounts
at
the end
show.
Of some weeks.
The end of the world is coming. Mm-hmm. What is the last thing you do? How do you spend your final moments?
Wow, that's such a big question. But you know, the thing that comes to mind, if the end's coming, it's like give thanks for everything I've had and got. You know, all the natural things come to mind, like, you know, you want to protect and all of that. But I think just, you know, giving thanks for the life I've had.
Yeah. Beautiful.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Angela. It's been lovely speaking to you today. It's been a great conversation.
I've really enjoyed it.